Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on Live Paranormal Radio Network. We're at liveparanormal.com and syndicated all over the world. iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, Podbean, Podomatic, the list goes on and on. Thank you for being here, and thank you for participating in some good paranormal and spiritual chat. I am your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister, and I am a 27-year talk radio host, and brought my shows over here to Live Paranormal this year, and so excited to be a part of this family and to be a part of the iHeartRadio family, which is so much fun and such a dream. And every week on the show, I gather folks that I believe are the brightest and most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in both the paranormal and the spiritual community. And we talk about things that go bump in the night, everything outside of the three dimensions, whether we're talking about life after death or you think there's a griffin in your backyard, it belongs here on Haunted Playground. And my guest today is returning to the show. He's a wonderfully talented guest. He's a lot of fun. We just did a film together in Joshua Tree over the summer with my dear friend Andrea Perrin, who's been here many times on the show. We learned then that we are one day apart from being twins, which is very exciting. It's always fun to have a fellow Aries here. And also, he's the founder of The Dark Zone. He's worked on many shows in the paranormal community, including Ghost Hunters. And he's a lot of fun and a fantastic guy to talk about things that go bump in the night with. So please, if you will welcome here back as a returning guest here to Haunted Playground, the wonderful Jay Blumke is here. How are you, my friend? It's so nice to have you back.
Hey, it's great to be back. I don't know what to do with myself. You said so many wonderful things about me. I'm wondering who you're talking about.
No, I set it up, man. I set you up and I talk you up. This is how we do it here.
I think
you're great. And it was... Uh-huh.
Well, I was just going to say it was funny when we met for the first time with Andrea out in the desert, and we found out that, yeah, we were born a day apart.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And there is a particular,
yeah,
I have found with my Aries friends, there is a particular love and passion for what it is we do in the world, right? Whether you want to call that work or the work or career or whatever you want to call it, there is a particular love for that with Aries. And I remember at one time in my life, my day gig was I booked live music. And I had this kind of circle of women that I knew, became good friends. And they all, the five of us, pretty much booked a lot of the music that was going on in Los Angeles at the time. And when I started doing everybody's charts and got into astrology, I ran all their charts, and every one of them, including me, was an Aries with a Capricorn moon. And I thought, wow, that's so weird. And I think it's because for Aries, like, work is fun, right? We love our work. And we find a way to make it a passion and not just, oh, God, I got to get up today. I got to go deal with this ghost hunting crap. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's what I loved about meeting you, was to see that kind of, you know, honest enthusiasm that you have and how you use that to pick up everybody around you and make them feel inspired. And it's very contagious.
Oh, that's nice.
And that's one of my favorite things about you now.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, I mean, you know, when we met, there was a film being produced and shot, and it wasn't mine.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I showed up and I met these people, and it was Andrea that brought us out, right? And it was just one of those things where they needed help. And I love, you know, production and making films and TV shows and stuff. So I didn't ask to be paid or anything. I just jumped in there and did it because that's what I love to do. You're right. I mean, Aries are very fiery people. Right,
we've got
we've got fires burned inside us. I don't know if that means we're going to burn out early or what, but we certainly are very passionate about what we do.
Oh, I don't think we're going to burn out at all. I think we're just going to keep going and going and going. I don't ever want to stop. I want to still be doing this when I'm 110, still having fun and still enjoying everything and still participating. And I see people, and, you know, I grew up in the entertainment business, and you probably, I know, did too. And I see so many people making it not fun, and there's not a reason for it to be not fun. I mean, Joshua Tree was a typical example, right? The folks who were producing it rented a location that promised air conditioning, which meant one portable air conditioning unit that didn't work. And so we were all there in the 100-degree heat, and it was not pleasant. And then a monsoon came in the middle of it, so then it became the humid and, you know, a lot of stuff. It's Joshua Tree, scorpions and fire ants, and but yet through enthusiasm, we made a family, we made friends. It was fantastic fun. We saw some earth spirits, some interdimensionals, some off-worlders. We had some great talk, and it was a great experience. So you can either, like, really make lemonade out of the lemons, or you can just sit around and complain about how bitter they are. And I see a lot of folks in the entertainment world complaining. And I think I just never wanted to be one of those that complained. You know, it's not worth it.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, in all the years that I've done paranormal television, I've done other stuff too, but paranormal in particular, there have been times when the cast members, and, you know, I'm not naming names or saying who or even what shows I'm talking about, but there have been times when the cast members, you know, they've done it so much. They go day in and day out, and they get tired of it. And, you know, you start hearing some complaints. And it's just like, you know, you guys are paranormal investigators, which is something that you really can't quantify, so that you really can't charge people for it. And you're being paid to make a TV show about what it is that you do, what your passion is. You guys are making a show. You're lucky. You should actually just love every second of what you're doing.
Yeah. I've never understood that. And maybe that's why we're always working. You know, I have a friend who got a chance to pitch like a big network, an idea for a show. And the network was sort of like, well, you know, but you know what we like? We like this idea. And my friend was sort of like, no, that's not my idea. I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Somebody from a network is now telling you, you know what we'd like you to do? It's this. I would have been like, okay, I'll do that. What else can we do? But I think that you're right, that there's this idea of ego, right? And ego is can be that example. Ego can be, oh, I don't want to have to hunt ghosts today. I'm tired. I mean, ego can be anything, you know? And it just gets in the way of the fun and the work and the passion. And, you know, the ghosts aren't going to hunt themselves, Jay.
Right, exactly. Somebody's got to do it.
Right, exactly. Somebody's got to do it. So with with that energy that you have that is so great, when you're doing something with Dark Zone, right, which is yours, so you can do whatever you want, and you can really set the tone for what the mood of everybody who works for your network is going to be, what are some things that are important for you about what you want it to be?
Here's what's important. When my partners and I first started this, we'd worked with a lot of people that we didn't feel were, you know, in it for the right reasons. We didn't feel like they were good people we didn't want to work with. So we're working with people that we think are good people. That's the start, right? So that's the first thing. The next thing is, when you see these shows, a lot of these paranormal shows, although some of them that I've done have been groups that were already established and, you know, together as a team, and some of these shows are cast, right? And so sometimes you'll get somebody who's cast in a position that isn't really who they are. And the problem with that is, like, for example, you're going to be the girl who gets scared, right? We want you to really react to things and be kind of like shocked and scared. And the problem with that is that these are reality shows and these people are using their real names. And so therefore, when you're an audience member at home watching the show, you think that that's who that person is because that's what they're showing you
right.
on TV. And so
right.
you end up with, sometimes you end up with serious investigators who are asked to, you know, get scared or, you know, kind of overreact or whatever, and it's not who they are. Or they're put in a position like, you're going to be the tech person. But they're not really the tech person. They really are like a researcher, you know. And so what we always said from the very beginning of The Dark Zone is that these paranormal investigators that we want to work with, we want them to be themselves. You know, we want them to
right.
show their fans and the audience and paranormal enthusiasts what their actual styles of investigation are, how they actually do things. Let their real personality shine out. And I think that's an attraction to some of these paranormal investigators who have been put on shows to be a specific thing, to fill a certain role that they aren't, it's not necessarily reflective of who they are.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I agree. And I think that happens. And also I think because television wants the scare, right? They want the scare and they want the demons, network television. So
yeah.
you have to maybe overreact, right? Not every investigator's personality is to vocalize everything they're thinking or they're seeing in a location. As a matter of fact, most people, when we start investigating, right, we're trained to be quiet so the machines pick stuff up. Yet when you're doing
right.
A show, they want you to be talking the whole time you're walking, which is kind of the opposite of what we're taught when we start investigating. So I think it's not in everyone's
right,
nature
right.
to be walking through a building saying, okay, I'm walking through the building and it feels cold. Okay, oh, my God, what was that? Okay, and I'm walking over here. You know what I mean? I think it's
right,
I think
right.
as a paranormal investigator, it's a lot of internalized time where you're just kind of thinking all that in your head. And not everybody's good at vocalizing that. Not everybody was trained as an actor.
Right, right. And, you know, it's funny. There
you
are there's a show that I've done. I'm not, again, going to name names, but it's guys in the woods looking for something, looking for creatures, and,
right,
man, are they loud. They are loud. Like, everything that they step on crunches, they go through the woods hooting and
right.
hollering. It's like, oh, I thought you were trying to trap something. You know, what is going
yeah.
on?
right,
and it's,
right,
you know,
exactly.
It's, and now, this is not a show that I direct. I've been the editor on this show. But it's just one of those things. It's not, you know, I wouldn't do it that way, but that's what the network requires. It's also the problem with, you know, working for networks. I mean, ultimately, if you think about it, The Dark Zone kind of is in that position of kind of being a network because we do our original programming. We don't do a whole lot of it, but we do our original programming, and we have certain standards. But we certainly don't have, you know, those kinds of requirements that suggest that you should do something that's unnatural or not authentic, you know?
Yeah, right.
And
right.
and networks do that. They have requirements. They, you know, they need ratings. They want the audience to jump and, you know, that's what networks.
It's an interesting thing I think to I mean, there's a couple that probably were always loud and chatty, but for the most part, a community of internalized people has had to learn to be external for video, and I think that that's
right.
Because especially a lot of the investigators that are just kind of like you know, for lack of a less respectful term, and I mean this in a high respectful term, tech nerds. Because I own nerd is a very important part of who I am. But, you know, where they're used to sitting over the machinery and being – those tend to be quieter people. And now suddenly,
right.
you know, they have to be – like you said, they have to be somebody they're not because that's what the show requires.
Yep.
And but I don't think everybody has to be the talker. I think it's okay for some people to be quieter. I don't think it's like, let's use the Scooby-Doo analogy because we're the same age. Not everybody has to talk all the time like Shaggy. Shaggy talks constantly through every location. Not everybody has to do that. Some people can be the friend.
Right. Yes.
So I think that's that, very important that you're letting people just kind of be who they are.
Well, it's funny because that term, Scooby-Doo, is a term that's used in the business, in the paranormal business, you know, or paranormal television business. You know, it's like, who's our Scooby-Doo or what's that Scooby-Doo moment? And, you know, it's that moment where you hear something, your head goes up, your eyes go wide, you know.
That's fantastic. I did not know that. That's wonderful. I love that.
Yeah. I love telling these kinds of stories. And, you know, I love telling them because I like to see reactions out of people as the audience. You know, I love being in the middle of it when it's happening and these moments actually happen and you capture them on camera. That's amazing, you know. But, you know, I understand how things are kind of categorized and how terminology is made to fit moments and stuff. So Scooby-Doo is something that I use as well. It makes sense.
I love that. Oops, I thought that sentence was continuing. I love that. So let's talk a little bit about what happened in Joshua Tree. And I know we can't talk, you know, specifically about it because we were making a film and, you know, we're not supposed to. I mean, I've had Andrea on. I've had a couple people from it. I've had Rick on and I've got Michael on tomorrow night. So I've got different people on that have talked about it. First of all, I have to tell you, I don't know about you, but I was a Joshua Tree virgin. I had never been there. I've lived in Los Angeles for Southern California for over 40 years since I was a kid. And I had never been to Joshua Tree and I was obsessed with the energy, Jay. I love it there. It's like, my Sedona.
Yes, it is. It has the same kind of feel.
Yeah. It's kind of like Sedona's, you know, funky cousin that plays folk songs under a tree. I mean, you know what I mean? It's really, unpolished and probably like what Sedona was like 30 years ago. I just thought it was amazing.
Right.
And it is so spiritually heavy, as I talked about when you had me do that walkthrough, with so many different things, you know, ghosts of the past, interdimensionals, earth spirits, tons of Native American energy, and then this weird thing with the off-worlders, right? And it's, I don't know that I've ever been anywhere where those five things,
Oh, no, I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry. The thing is that, you know, when I get into filmmaker mode, I stop becoming an observer. So I don't get to experience the things that are happening the same way you do, but I remember very well that walk that we did, and I was curious with all of the things that you picked up on. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I mean, I was just going to say that I don't remember ever being anywhere outside of Joshua Tree. And I felt it. I went to the national park the next day. I felt it there. I felt it, you know, shopping on Yucca, on the main street. I felt it everywhere I went. I felt it in the motel. And I've never been anywhere where those five different kinds of energies were so strong all at once. You know, in Sedona, the off-worlder energy is super strong. The native energy is super strong. Other things, not as much. But Joshua Tree, and I really think, Jay, that it has to do with the trees. I think that there is that the trees are tuning forks, like they're beacons for it. They bring the energy in. They resonate.
Interesting.
that they are themselves spiritual creatures. It's like if you had an area with like, you know, every 3 feet there were two psychics planted there. And I think that they're conduits for it, for all of it. I think they draw off-world energy, the UFO energy. I think they hold the native energy there. I think the earth spirits and those trees are so intertwined that it's almost hard to separate the energy. And I think that the interdimensionals, same thing. They just love it. And plus also, you know, the lack of people helps because I think people ethereal energy go away.
That was my theory, was this idea that you don't find this kind of thing in cities necessarily. I mean, maybe you do. I've not heard of it. But, you know, I was wondering what your thoughts were on the idea that when you go to these places that are off the grid a little bit, you know, I mean, do you feel like there's more of, you know, the chance for something like this to happen? Are they just kind of getting away from people?
I definitely think that helps. But I think it's about the land. I'll tell you a funny story. So I grew up in the late 70s in a house about 30 minutes outside of Baltimore, Maryland, that, I mean, really was like an Amityville or a Conjuring house. I mean, it was Andrea and I sort of met because, you know, we were Chip Coffee hooked us up because we were both paranormal survivors.
Okay.
I mean, really, really. So when I was 13, my dad got transferred out to Southern California, and we thought, oh, thank God, we're getting away from that house. And we moved to the beach, to Huntington Beach, which is one of the most beautiful places in the world, where I still live half of my life and half in the city, but which is probably one of the most haunted places I've ever been. And I remember when I was a kid, my friend sort of taking my mom was also a psychic medium. I remember my friend sort of taking my mom aside and saying, can I talk to you about something, but don't tell Sheena. And years later, I would say to her, what was that about? She's like, oh, they all lived in haunted houses, and I thought they were the only ones seeing their dead grandparents. And I think, but the same thing, the combination of, it's a huge Indian burial ground. There's a huge Indian burial ground right there that's now a marshland, a wetland. There is, you know, tons of native energy because of that. There's tons of off-world energy because it kind of hangs off the end of the continent. The water is a huge spiritual conduit. I mean, most of Huntington Beach is underwater. So it's kind of like Joshua Tree, right, where it has all these kind of perfect storm factors of making something really resonate like a tuning fork. And that's kind of the thing I feel about Joshua Tree, too, and is populated but not like a Los Angeles or not like, you know what I mean? And there's in that wetland area, there's nothing. And, you know, I always laugh that, you know, we moved here in 1980 and it's 2021 and I can still go to the bank and there's no line. So I think people have a stagnating energy, Jay, and I think it chases away spirit activity. I don't know if we talked about this when you were here last time, but I know I've talked about it a lot of folks on the show, that when these television teams go out, right, the more teams investigate a location, the less they seem to get. And I think it's really because the spirits are kind of like, ooh, people, and they disappear, you know? So I think we in the community are always chasing that new location.
Speaking of Andrea and her home, or her old home, the home she grew up in, the Conjuring House.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
Have you
been to the house?
No. I would love to, but I have not. No, I would love to go there.
Because, you know, she says that it's a portal cleverly disguised as a farmhouse. So I guess that also, you know, from her perspective, and I think a lot of people's perspectives, is the land more than anything else.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes. Yeah, and the off-worlder visits, right? I mean, she says from the day she got there, the off-worlders were in the sky visiting. So, and you also have to ask, you have to wonder how much of that is her and her family. I always think about this with the Amityville haunting and the Lutzes, right? How much of the people that lived in the house afterwards saying, oh, there's nothing here. Is it denial?
Right.
Do they just not want the publicity? Do they not see it? Or do the spirits target certain people because they have a little more of the shine, right?
Right. Right.
I've always wondered about that, especially since we now know that George Lutz was very involved in the Long Island occult scene. I mean, was his constant seeking and searching and calling out for things, drawing in stuff that maybe we wouldn't have seen had he not been searching? Maybe if it had just been some, you know, family that didn't care and weren't psychics and didn't care about anything beyond the three dimensions, they don't see it as much. I don't know.
Right, right.
I mean, with all the places you've seen.
Exactly. That's where I was going. The idea that, so many people go into Andrea's childhood home and they have incredible experiences. And I was just, it was another house to me. It was just perfectly pleasant and peaceful, you know. So that I don't think would ever have the experiences that the Lutzes had or that anybody else had. I mean, I would love to live in the Amityville house. It's such a beautiful house.
Right. It is beautiful. Yeah. And you get that nice boathouse where the dog got strangled, but it's gorgeous to look at. Yeah. Uh-huh. But I'll tell you an interesting thing about this house I grew up in, because I do believe, I know this is very Stephen King of me, but I do believe that haunted houses have their own personality, their own, they're almost sort of like living things. And
right.
My parents tried so hard to keep that house nice, despite all the weird things that happened there, like snakes were always coming up and knocking on the sliding glass door, and a snapping turtle was always trying to kill my dad. Like, there was all this weird animal activity as well. My best friend from junior high works near there. And she was like, hey, let me go by and take some pictures of the house for you. Wouldn't that be funny? This thing now looks like, on the outside, like it always felt on the inside. It's got vines growing all over it. It looks like nobody's mowed the lawn since the 70s. And it really now is as awful on the outside as it was on the inside. And interesting, and I bring this up because I know that Andrea's house, the Conjuring house, is now for sale again. We moved four times when I was a kid. My dad got transferred, and every time my parents fixed up the house, made a lot of money, and moved to the next one. Well, this house, they couldn't sell. And we actually moved to California and bought what is now our home here, that is now my home since my folks died. And that house wasn't even sold. It took another year. And the amount of money that it sold for was less. It was the only time they ever lost money on a house. So when I did Andrea's new show during the summer, and the producers asked me to go and find out some stuff about that house, because that's what I was talking about. So I went and looked it up on Zillow and Redfin, and it has not increased in value since it was sold in 1981. I mean, that's almost unheard of in this country.
Is it a stigmatized house where people in the neighborhood believe that it's the haunted house?
Not that we ever heard. We kept it very much to ourselves. Because I think my mom, being an in-the-closet psychic, the whole idea was, don't tell anybody or they'll come after us with the pitchforks and the torches. So we never talked about it.
Right.
And my dad was a complete disbeliever. You know, he was one of those engineer atheists that believed in nothing. And it wasn't until close to his death that he started admitting to stuff. Oh, you know what I saw in that house? So isn't that interesting that that house still isn't worth any money, and it makes me wonder now with the Conjuring house for sale again, because when I saw what it was for sale for, I was like, wow, that doesn't seem that great, that this house now doesn't really want anyone to live in it, so it sort of is, you know, not helping to be sold.
Right.
That probably sounds really out there, but...
You know, well, the interesting thing is, I know the Heintons pretty well, and their situation is interesting because, you know, they are paranormal investigators, and they were so fascinated by the house and obsessed by the house that they bought it, and they love it, and I think they love it on almost the same level as the parents still love it. It's just there's something about that house that it's just so. I don't know. It's beautiful out there. And it's to me, the house is very comfortable. But what they are struggling against is that people consistently ignore the private property signage, and there's signs everywhere, and they keep walking up on the house and bugging them. They keep walking up, and they just feel like they're entitled to walk up, knock on the door, and just say, can I get a picture? And, you know, that's when you have a family and when you're being protective of your property, that's a hassle. I was speaking to Corey the other day, and I had him on a Zoom call, and I noticed that he wasn't really looking into his computer camera, because what he was doing was he was keeping his eyes on the monitors, the cameras that are around his house.
Right.
Because somebody was trying to walk up on it. And this becomes an everyday task for him. It's a job, and it's not something that, you know, you want to do for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So I understand.
Yeah. I totally understand as well. I get it 100%. And I wonder sometimes, I had a friend who, and I did for years too. My friend used to cocktail at the Viper Room, and I booked shows there maybe for 2 years. One of the last places I booked before I got so busy with full-time radio. And people would walk up to you on the street and just say, can you point to the spot where River Phoenix died? And I would think, really?
Yeah.
First of all, you know,
so they can
lay
down
20 years ago. And they do. And they lay down on the sidewalk and take a selfie of themselves. Yeah, but my friend who cocktailed there, she was cocktailing across the street the night that he died. And she said that, she didn't cocktail there. She cocktailed the whiskey across the street. But she had friends that worked there, and she said people, like, right after he died, like days after, were coming and trying to lay down there. I mean, so that's the problem with living in an infamous place. I always feel sorry for those poor people that live in the real Exorcist house, because they look not happy. So it's a lot to live in a house like that. I don't want to live in a house like that. I want to live in a house where, you know, I always say I like your ghost, but I don't want my own. So I think it's
funny.
A lot. And I know Andrea wants to go back there.
But we also live in this day and age of YouTubers, and you know, the paranormal is becoming very, very popular again. And so you've got these YouTubers who don't necessarily follow any rules, and they just kind of go out and shoot their own stuff, and, you know, and then they make that accessible to their audiences. And some of these people had millions of subscribers, and then they start going on these expeditions too. So it's definitely a rough time. And I don't, you know, I mean, for that reason, I would not buy a house that is famous or infamous and try to live in it.
Yeah, no, it's too much. It's too much. And do you really want to live in a place? Well, you didn't feel anything in the Conjuring house. I can tell you from my experience, Jay, you don't want to live in a place that's that haunted, because it messes with your daily life. You know what? It's like living with a very troubled person that lives in your family, in your home. Because all the attention is being paid to this home, which is really kind of sucking your energy out. And demanding a lot of attention. You know, you're trying to do something, and then on the walls, and then scratchy, 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 and then lights are on and off, and then faucets on and off. And this kind of stuff detracts from your everyday life. It's fun to watch in a movie. It's fun to go to, like, an amusement park thing at Halloween and go through a haunted maze. But to live in a place where there is constant disruption is that's not fun. And you be kind of on edge all the time, so you never quite get a good sleep, or you never – you know, I'm so funny, because when I see things like that, I watched this movie last night on Netflix and about this girl that lives in a haunted boarding house, and I had, like, PTSD the whole time, because I'm like, oh, God, somebody save her, you know what I mean? Because I know what it's like to never get a good night's rest. And it's not fun.
Right.
It's like, I think we talked about this last time, right? It's like people that want to see a demon. I want to see a demon. But no, you don't.
No, you don't. That's right. You know, what's interesting is I was watching an episode of Haunt Me. Ty Gowan was talking about you know, the location itself was the haunt. It was, like you were saying, the house had a personality. It was a character. It was the haunted thing that they were interacting with. And, you know,
right.
Ty said that he got a, like a visual of all of them with threads, like, coming out of their foreheads, going up to either the ceiling or down to the floor. And it was as if the house was feeding off their energy.
Yes, definitely.
Pretty interesting.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, and I said it was very Stephen King of me because for people listening that have read Salem's Lot, and I read that maybe the year or maybe a year after we left that house when we first got here to California, it, you know, the idea of the main character who had an experience in there as a kid who felt all that time like the house and the town were drawing him back to sort of have this showdown
right.
with the house. And it is true. It is like that. I mean, I never got a night terror before we moved in that house. And I didn't start getting the night terrors until we left that house. And now after so many years has passed, they're very infrequent, but whenever in my life I have had one, it's always about that house. I've never had a night terror about anything that wasn't that house. And I pretty much have never had a nightmare about anything that wasn't that house. And being a psychic person who thinks of everything as very spiritual tie and connection, I'm like, is that thing pulling on me? Cut it out, house, you know?
Right.
Go find someone to live
and,
there.
You know.
And leave me
and,
alone.
And I, you know, even though I always say to people that I don't, you know, I'm not sensitive at all. I don't feel things. There are places that I've been, only one or two, where you feel really drained when you leave. And, you know, I never really chalked it up to paranormal necessarily, but it could be. You know, that could be how
sure.
I experience it.
Absolutely. Sure, absolutely. And you just quantify it in a different way. I mean, I think if you know what it is, you know, when we first moved to that house, I didn't know what any of that was. We didn't know what was going on. But once you're used to it, then you get used to it. Do you know what I mean? Once you see it,
yeah.
then it comes on your radar, and then you can tell when it's happening. But, yeah, I think probably
right, right.
that's exactly what that is. It's a spectrum like everything else, right? Not every haunting is Amityville. Some stuff is just
right.
for every couple of weeks the faucet turns itself on. I mean, little tiny things. Or you just feel an energy in your heart, or you just feel like somebody's around you. And that's what most hauntings are like for people. And that's totally okay, too, you know?
Right. Have you ever been to David Oman's house?
Oh, yes. Many times. Mm-hmm.
that place
yes.
Drained me. It drained me. I mean, I was sweating
yeah.
and everything. And the people that I was with, Colin Browen and Susan Slaughter, we, you know, they actually reacted more violently to it. I mean, Susan was nauseous a lot. Colin had a splitting headache. And I just felt like, I don't know, I just felt like hot. And I was like sweaty and, you know, my back hurt a little bit. And as soon as we walked out of that house, it was gone. I felt so much better.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I agree. But you know what happened to me once? I mean, I've been there many times, and a lot of stuff happened there, and I consider David to be a good friend. First of all, that earth room. Have you been to the earth room down in the basement?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've been all over that house.
For people who don't know, you open the door, and it's literally the side of the Hollywood Hills is right in there, and they never finished
yeah,
it. They were
going to
make
hill.
It another bathroom or something, and they never did. So it's really just earth. And you can feel
yeah.
the native energy coming out of it. I'm sure some folks are buried there, or there are ceremonial things buried there, something, because you can feel it. And you, I go in there, I always kind of sit down and say, I'm your friend. I'm not going to invade your house. I'm just here to be friends. The creepiest thing that ever happened to me was I was leaving there because David and I used to broadcast from there. And I was leaving there like around 1-2 in the morning. And he went out to walk the dog. And I had this idea that instead of going out to the right, because I was parked facing the other way, and going down the hill, that I could go to the end of the street and turn around. But it's not a cul-de-sac. So you get to the end of the street, and your car nose is pointed right at the gate, and that's where the Sharon Tate's house was. And that was the strongest, creepiest, awful energy. I have never put a car in reverse and backed up so quickly. Because I almost didn't know where I was. I kept waiting for the cul-de-sac. And then I finally got to the end of the street and realized there was no place to turn around. And I felt this heaviness just flood over me. And I looked up at that gate and I thought, oh, my, uh-oh. And, you know, some people who talk about, like, is it really haunted? Is that really a thing? Yeah. I mean, it's some places it's really a thing. Even though it's a very popular location, it still is extremely haunted, and it still is very difficult to be around it. And I would set foot on that property if you asked me to, and I was going with you, Jay, but I cannot imagine why anybody would want to live on that property, you know?
Well, what do you think the energy is? I mean, you know, I mean, people would automatically jump to the conclusion that it's Sharon Tate, Jay Sebring, and all that, but maybe it's something that was there before.
Yeah, or maybe it's just like a Gettysburg or an Auschwitz, where you can feel the resonant energy of what happened there and the darkness that the Manson family brought to that place with their energy. You know that feeling of Gettysburg where you just kind of feel heavy? That's my sense of it, yeah. And all that crazy Native American energy that's all over the place, and the interdimensional energy and the earth spirits that are all over there, that are all over David's house too. But I really think the heaviness of what took place there. I think some places don't forget their wounds, just like some people don't, right? Some people get over trauma, and some people keep that trauma right in front of their face like it happened yesterday. I think it's the same thing with locations. Certainly Gettysburg is like that. Gettysburg has never forgotten what happened there.
Right.
To Gettysburg?
I've never been.
Oh, wow. All right. It's a trip. We're planning it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really do want to go. So many people go and tell me about that it's probably one of the most haunted locations that they've ever been to, and I'd like to go and experience that at some point.
And it has a lot of sadness. I think if you're expecting it to be like a – Like I said, like a haunted corn maze where things are going to jump out at you. It's not like that. It's a lot. It feels sad. It's a lot of sadness. Bring your Prozac when you go. It's a lot of sadness.
Okay. All right.
And I think the Tate House has that too, but also has some other creepy stuff kind of mixed in, you know?
Yeah.
All that darkness.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, I don't know how you feel about this, and now we're going. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say that's a location that I could not spend a lot of time in. That's a place I would not want to live in.
No. Quick trip and we're out.
Yep.
There is So what do you think about this? Because I always throw this by people sometimes, and you're a great, knowledgeable, spiritual person. I think that sometimes when there is a lot of crazy, like the Manson family, and there is an entity like Charles Manson, right, that is more than just mentally unbalanced, that actually carries some darkness within him. I think sometimes negative spirits, like little dark things, sometimes earth spirits, sometimes little, I hate to say demonic because it's not like a demon, but it's just dark energy, what I like to call spiritual hitchhikers, will sometimes attach themselves to people like that. So when you have that whole kind of nest of them, what was going on throughout that family, right? And then a bunch of them wandering around the hills, hitchhiking and scoping out that house and pulling weird stuff. And then what they inevitably, the horrors they wound up committing there, that's a lot of darkness, and it kind of hangs around. Do you agree with that?
Well, I often think it's about intentions, right? I mean, I think their intentions were dark. They always were. They were opportunistic. They robbed people. You know, they killed people. They did not want to make an honest living, so they were doing what they needed to do, and it was bad intentions. I think that, you know, you always hear stories about like Paranormal Activity kicking up or poltergeist activity kicking up when families are going through turmoil. This fighting about money, fighting about whatever. It is that negative energy that I think can attract negative, like, beings or spirits.
Absolutely. And vice versa. My family never fought. The three of us never fought like when we lived in that house. I mean, my parents didn't have the most snuggly relationship. It was not a good marriage. And my dad was kind of weird, like engineer. That probably said it all, right? He didn't want much to do with either of us. But in that house, I mean, it was like we went months at a time without talking to each other. And even my mom and I, who were so close, there were periods of not being in that house. And I think it was the negativity. So I think it works both ways. But yes, if you are weak in any way, right? If you're sick, if you have a physical ailment, if you have an emotional ailment, if you're grieving, if you're in the middle of a breakup or there's discord in the house, those are all things that attract the negative energy to come in and prey on a family.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because that is kind of the way of nature, right? I had two dogs. They were both golden retrievers, and you know, golden retrievers are the most, you know, kind of mellow, happy dogs that you can have. They were brothers from the same litter, and they just loved each other, and they played all the time. Well, one day one got sick, and it was the weirdest thing to see that when the one brother was sick, the other brother would attack him because he was weak, you know, and you see that in nature all the time. You have to, you know, you see that the strong will try to be predatory over the weak. And it's just a weird kind of reflex.
Yeah. And I agree. And it's the same thing, I think, with spirits. Either they're positive spirits that are trying to build up people that need help, or negative spirits will try to attack people that need help. I remember a few years ago I fell on doing a musical, and I hurt both my knees, and I was walking with a cane. And for the first time in my life, strange people would start following me in parking lots, like, because I think people who are predators that are looking to do whatever it is they're looking to do, something not good, they're looking for a weak person to prey on.
Right.
And
they don't want to fight.
And I never, right. They want something easy. And I never noticed that before until I was limping. And I thought, oh, you're kind of checking me out to see if I'm prey. And that's, unfortunately, the nature of the universe, right? There is negativity. Some comes in the form of a living thing, and some just comes in the form of a disembodied thing, but it is still the negativity. How do you handle that negativity when you're investigating or when you're putting together something? Because you have to do something to combat against it, right?
Well, by nature, and you've met me and we've been around each other for a little bit, by nature, I'm not a negative person, you know?
Sure.
So I'm always pretty positive, and I want everybody I'm working with to have fun doing what they're doing. Of course, take it seriously, but have fun at least, because otherwise, if you're not enjoying yourself and you're not passionate about what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing it. So I don't think that I've ever really run into what I would, you know, what I would feel was a negative energy. Out of all the 100 locations I've ever been to, not one time, not that I can think of anyway, not one time did anybody walk away saying, oh, there's a demon in here. Never.
Yeah.
That has never happened on all the shows that I've ever done. There are plenty of other shows that it happens every episode, but we never experienced
that. I was just going to say every week.
I don't think I've ever really experienced anything that was negative that came at me. And to be honest, if anything like that ever did happen, not sure I'd know how to react. You know, I would then have to put my trust in the paranormal investigators around me who are my friends.
Yeah. Do you think that it's just that people don't know the difference in a dark energy and a demon? Do you think it's just that's the problem, that anytime something dark is around, people think, oh, demon, demon, demon?
Yeah, I do. I think that correlation is almost always made.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of it. People just don't know the difference in what's a demon and what's not a demon.
And you know,
and
it,
also
it's
television,
because,
right? Everything's a demon.
Right, exactly. And also I think too, if your show is about a demonologist, or if you are a demonologist, and you know, there have been some very famous demonologists, everything that you investigate is going to be a demon. You know, it's just, it's your perspective. That's how you're going to see it.
Right.
You know, it's always going to have some kind of religious connotation if you're a very religious person. If you're a paranormal investigator that's attached to the church, that's kind of how you're going to view things. You know, if you're
right.
a very kind of mystical person, or you're Wiccan or, you know, whatever, you're going to see things differently. That's going to be more like energies, you know, and
yes.
you're going to be feeling energies, and then there may be a whole bunch of them. There are plenty of, I mean, if you're Irish and you're in Ireland, it's going to be the fairies.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, they
right.
take that very seriously.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
and I am
it's
Irish,
all about
and I believe there are fairies are everywhere. Yeah, yeah,
right,
absolutely.
Right.
I agree with that 100%. But I also think that demon is a very serious thing. It's not just darkness. It's a demon is a whole different. Look, and I believe in demons. 100% I do, and I think there are definitely situations where people have suffered various kinds of demonic suction and possession and obsession and all the different things. But I think it's very rare, and I think it's very terrible, and I think sometimes we glorify it like it's something cool, and it's
right.
just not. You know what I mean? It's a horrible
well,
thing to encounter because it changes your life forever. You never really get over that.
I imagine you read Whitley's book, Communion.
Yes.
Whitley Strieber.
Yes. Yes.
And there's a great little bit at the back of the book. It's the very, very end of the last chapter where he says, you know, in this period of time, they were called goblins. In this period of time, they were called fairies. In this period of time, they were called this. Now we call, and I think one of them was demons. In this period of time, they're gray aliens, right? It's like, could these things all be the same thing?
Right. Right.
And if you're a religious
person
and you're attached to the church, you're going to see a demon. It's going to be a demon mm-hmm. to you. If you're, you know, a UFO experiencer, maybe the same thing that people see as a demon is going to be a gray alien.
Right, right.
I don't know.
I mean, I do think that there is a difference, but I do think the similarity in all those things is they are all sort of harbingers of darkness.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want to run into them in a dark alley, as my mom used to say. You know what I mean? I mean, all of those
yeah.
things not good.
Right,
I
right.
think all things that you mentioned exist, but I think all of those things all carry the same energetic resonance, which is not good.
Right.
Gotcha. I don't know why the gray aliens, not good. Although he has a very interesting relationship with them, right? Kind of a love-hate relationship with them.
And it's although he does seem to be. I mean, I've never met him, but I've worked on a lot of shows where I've had to edit his interviews and so forth. And he seems to be tortured by it. It's not something that he's
yeah.
ever really come to terms with.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, but I think that when something is possessing you, and I don't mean that in the demonic way, a human being can possess another person in the sense that they can, you know, enchant them.
Yes.
It's sort of like Stockholm syndrome. I think he has Stockholm syndrome for them. Like it's,
right,
he's terrified
right.
by them, but at the same time, he's become very protective of them and fascinated by them. And that's
it's
a hard, but again,
life, yeah.
you encounter something like that, he's never going to be the person he was before. He's always going to be dealing with that trauma. You don't want that in your life, right?
Well, here's the interesting
thing.
Based on his stories, you know, I mean, he's been experiencing it his entire life as far as he knows. And it isn't until the realization or the recognition of what was actually happening to him that it bothered him, right? Prior to that, he was still having the experiences, but he wasn't aware of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and yet it makes you wonder, right, how many people throughout history have had these experiences
exactly. And
thought they were just dreams, it was just the drink, like I was something I ate. You know, like in Christmas Carol, right, when Scrooge sees Jacob Marley and he thinks he's a bit of undigested cheese. I mean, maybe for years that's what people thought, that the gray aliens were just a cup of ale that didn't sit well.
Right.
Yeah, it's all fascinating. Honey, it's always wonderful to have you here. You are completely fantastic. What can you tell people about what's coming up on The Dark Zone, and where can people find you?
Oh, my. Yeah, so we've got a lot of stuff going on. We've been talking a lot about our Halloween event, our next live streaming event. We're going back to the Real Conjuring House. This time, we're taking Andrea and her father and her sister with her, Nancy, and then Christine, Cindy, and Carolyn, the mom, will be remoting in. So we're going to have the entire family at the house, basically. And we're going to, we've got four of the top investigators. We've got Susan Slaughter, Kristen Lumen, Brandon Alvis, and Mustafa Gattalari, who are going to be with us to help figure out what's going on. I mean, when Andrea and her father and her sister start walking around the house and telling the stories about what they experienced there, that place can become really charged. So we're going to have the investigators there ready to check it out. And we also have Ken DaCosta coming in. Ken DaCosta is local. He's got Rise Up Paranormal. He's also got his own show, which is Dead Air. But he's one of the outside investigators that has investigated that place more than anybody else, with the exception of the Heisen family, who are also investigators who happen to live there. So, you know, he's going to come in with his perspective on what's going on there. And it's 3 days in a row. You can get your tickets for the live stream at thedarkzone.endavomedia.com. And it's just like all the other events we've done. It's totally interactive. If you're watching, you can act as a remote ghost hunter, because you'll be able to see all the static cameras that are in the other rooms, in some of the most haunted rooms, and you'll be able to tell us, just by texting in the little text window, what you see. If you see a shadow person in the seance room and everybody happens to be down in the basement, just let us know and we'll go check it out.
Oh,
that's
awesome.
A level of interactivity
that nobody
else does.
It's wonderful.
So that's
it's
that.
Amazing.
And we also have an app coming out, the Dark Zone app, which is basically anything that you enjoy in the paranormal community all under one roof. And we're going to a couple of the paranormal conventions. This weekend we're going to be at Vulture City Paracon, and then in December we'll be at the Vegas Parunity.
I love that. That's fantastic. Please keep me posted on everything you're doing and let me know how I can be more involved in everything you're doing. And please come back and do this again. I'd love it.
Absolutely. I love doing your show.
Thank you, my friend. It's wonderful to have you here. Everybody, we're at liveparanormal.com, hauntedplayground.com. I'm Sheena Metal. I'm at sheenametalspiritual.com. Make sure you stay spooky and be as spiritual as you can. Stay in the light, my friends. It's wonderful to have you here. Thanks to Jay Blumke for being here. Till I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, always raise your vibration. I love you all, and I'll see you next Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific time on Haunted Playground.